Good afternoon, everyone. Today is Thursday, August 25th, 2011. This is Rajiv Escana for immigration.com, Law Offices of Rajiv Escana PC. This is a community conference call we hold every other Thursday. By participating in this call, you do not agree to be represented by us, nor do we agree to represent you. There is no attorney-client relationship created. This is a community call basically to provide general information. Being recorded and will be made publicly available. So if you speak up on this call, you may want to conceal your identity. And if you don't want your voice to be recorded, hang up or don't speak. That said, let me get started with the questions that have been posted first. The first question is regarding I-140 revocation. This gentleman or lady, T-Mast, I guess, T-M-A-S-T-H, that's the username. They say that they have spoken with their lawyer, and the lawyer says that the priority date can be ported even if the I-140 is revoked or withdrawn by the old employer. And my answer is no, that is no longer true. USCIS has withdrawn or gone back from that point of view unless they have changed something again in the last 15, 20 days or so. They reversed their own policy and they no longer let you carry forward the priority date even if the I-140 has been revoked without any finding of fraud. Okay? So your lawyer is wrong. All right? Now, interesting thing is that there is nothing in writing that says that they have changed their mind. I haven't seen anything ever. But if you look at the regulations actually seem to be pretty clear that the priority date is lost upon all revocations, not necessarily based upon revocation for fraud or misrepresentation. Okay. Next question, HYRC, international student F1 visa from Pakistan. Meantime, a green card has been approved. Well, let me make your life real easy, Mr. YRC. But first of all, you are allowed to file as many green cards as you like. So you can file a 485 through your father's or uncle's application. I'm not sure of the merits of that application. Whatever those merits are, you can go ahead and apply for work authorization through that as well if the priority date is current. So your question is, if I filed for a change of status from H-1B to green card beneficiary under my father, can I apply for work authorization? And the answer is yes. Question number two, will I have to go through admin process for a change of status? Everybody does. Okay, everybody does. Everybody has to go through some processing. Will this take longer time because I'm from Pakistan? It could. It's difficult to say, but certainly it could. Normally, most of these I-485s are taking anywhere between 3 months and a year, but who knows. Question number three, I plan to get married to a U.S. citizen. Will that petition take less time to process? If you applied through a current petition where the priority date was current, like through an uncle or through your spouse, I think it will take the same amount of time. But like I said in the beginning, you can file a green card under several, so you can have 10 green cards pending if you wanted. Okay? That's not a problem. Next question is Ms. T. I am a new user to this site, scheduled for an immigration interview with my spouse, nervous because the husband entered the country legally. They have a child together. Because he's a Canadian citizen, there is no proof of entry other than affidavits. I think that's the best you can do. And my advice is, of course, an affidavit from both husband's mother as well as the aunt, as well as your own husband, how they entered USA. I think that should be okay. Next question is from somebody, username is Apley. In questions 26, 27, and 28 of the N-400 application, first of all, folks, I will not help you fill out the form. I can give you general answers. But if I fill out the form, then I have to sign the paperwork because that means I have assisted you in filling out the form. If you look at the paperwork, it says, who assisted you in preparing this form? Then we have to sign at the bottom, and we're not going to do that for you. So I cannot give you exact answers, but I can tell you in general how things are. When in doubt, you should always give all the information in your possession. So what you can do is, with the N-400, you can attach a letter saying, by the way, I have marked this section of the form like this, believing this to be the case, but this is what happened. So that way you have disclosed everything to the government. Okay? Voluntarily returning back to the home country is not applying for relief from removal petition. That's for sure. So that's not a problem. Okay? So err on the side of total disclosure, and relief from removal, exclusion, or deportation is not the same thing as voluntarily returning back. Your case looks a little complicated to me. I think you should have a consultation with a lawyer who goes over your entire background to make sure that you're doing the right thing. Because my concern is, if your green card was ever in question, then when you apply for citizenship, they could take away your green card and deport you instead of giving you citizenship. So please be a little careful with this, okay? Next question is from Mr. Srinivasan, who is an older gentleman who wants to know about his naturalization. His trip to his country was always, to visit his mother, who was more than 90 years old, and now she has passed on. So the question is, how do we explain the delay of 181 days? Normally, Srinivasanji, the way it works is, if your trip can be explained and it's less than 1 year and more than 6 months, USCIS does not usually create a problem. How do they count 6 months? There is no easy rule to this. Most of the times, I would just say 180 days or more is 6 months. Actually, that's not true, because in most instances, 180 days will be less than 6 months. But this, as far as I know, that's how they count it, kind of use it roughly as analogous or the same. But 180 days or 6 months is probably the same thing. Okay, but I'm not that concerned. 181 days is not that big a deal, especially where you have a very cogent explanation, because your mother was needs to be taken care of and you had been coming along. I really don't know your whole case. I hope you're on the phone. I would like to speak with you a little bit more and maybe discuss this a little further. If you are here, we'll get back to it. Otherwise, what I just said goes, which is 181 days are fairly easily explainable. I'm looking at your trips. First trip is 181 days, second trip is 133, then 126, then 125, then 125, 149. All these trips are kind of indicative almost to me that you are just trying to maintain the green card by coming every 6 months. And I'm not sure if that's the way it is or if you actually moved your permanent residence to the United States. That's always the main thing. Again, if you are on the phone, I would like to speak with you a little bit more. Next question is Mitali Kashyap. Employer has not paid Mitali. Will I be considered an authorized period of stay starting April 15th? No, you will not. What you should do, and I have advised this to many people, when an employer does not pay you, you file a complaint against the employer for non-payment of wages with the Department of Labor, Wage and Hour Division. So I think the form is called WH-8 or something like that, WH-8, I think. You file that. Once you have filed that, that will give you two advantages. One, you will get your money back unless the employer has revoked your H-1. They are required to pay you. They can't just stop paying you. Unless they revoke your H-1, they cannot stop paying you. Number two, when you apply for another H-1 like you intend to and you have a complaint pending or filed, it gives USCIS a reason to excuse your being out of status. If you're not working, you're out of status. Okay? So this is not authorized period of stay. Currently, you're out of status. And again, your question is, what do I do about missing pay stubs? If you file a complaint, that is the best thing to do. Unpaid off leave of absence is not good enough. it's going to be problematic for you. While the H-1B transfer is in place, can the employer B also start filing a fresh H-1B parallelly? Yeah, you can have more than one H-1B going on at the same time. And if you file the complaint as I have suggested, then the risk of rejection becomes smaller. Then CP, the next, Immigration 1975, that's the name of the user. Immigration 1975 says, I've received an email from NVC to pay the fees to process my green card through consular processing. I haven't decided yet whether I want to file AOS or go through consular processing. My spouse sometime back out of status more than 180 days on H-1B. Well, you know, confirm these things. You should not have unlawful presence problems because that bars potentially for anywhere from 3 to 10 years, and you want to be careful with that. Make sure that that's not a problem. I heard that for out-of-status cases, CP would be a better option. It can be if the out-of-status was more than 180 days. And remember, Section 245K, K as in kite, protects those people who have been out-of-status or unlawfully employed for less than 180 days, less than 180 days. And the 180-day period counts from the date of the last entry. To give you an example, let's say I came to USA on H-1B in the year 2006. I didn't have employment. I stayed at home for 8 months, so I was out of status for 8 months. In 2007, I left USA, and I came back on another H-1 visa. And again, I didn't work for 120 days, but then I started working. Okay. Now, when I file my adjustment of status, the old 800 days period will not be counted because since then I have gone outside and come back. The only time I've been out of status is 120 days, so I'm protected. So the 180 days period is counted from the date of the last entry before you file the 485. And if you don't meet that, then CP is the only way to, well, the best way to go. Let's say my priority date becomes current in Jan 2012. Will NVC schedule an interview in month of Jan itself? No. They are not that quick. It'll take you a little bit of time. Now, user_local wants to know about the memo encouraging entrepreneurship. Well, sir, unfortunately, we have no information beyond what we have seen so far. What are we doing? This is what I'm advising people. If you believe you are entitled to an entrepreneur, ship-based NIW, you should wait a few months if you want to file through that method so that we understand a little bit more what the government wants to do with these cases. So far, we have a very general policy announcement, okay? But if you are impatient and you want to try, there is no harm in trying as long as you don't mind losing the money. You can go ahead and apply for an NIW now, see how it plays out. If it works, great. If it doesn't work, then you can apply again whenever the policy, the detailed policy, is made public. Okay? So, just 1 second. Sorry, I lost my question somewhere. I was being paged. Just give me 1 second. Yes, talking about entrepreneurship. So we can always file a case now and see how it plays out. And then when the policy comes out, we can file again. There are certain things I'm keeping an eye out. If you have another green card application pending, how do I make sure that I'm not hurting that application. Some things I have to kind of see. But it certainly is very exciting. I mean, I have seen this step in the right direction after many, many years where the government has actually acknowledged that, you know, entrepreneurship, encouraging entrepreneurship in USA is important and, you know, we must not let all our talent go to waste. So I have very good hopes for this. I'm hoping that we gave some input about a month and a half ago to some of the White House economists about what was going on in the business immigration world, and I'm hoping that we'll be invited to give a little bit more input on this issue as well. So far, we have not been invited, nor have I seen any major moves towards a policy formulation by the government. They have basically announced that they want to do it. They haven't said what the parameters are going to be. And they may just leave it like that. You know, I really don't know. I personally think that if you are in a hurry and you want to take a chance, let's go ahead and do it. But if you want to wait a few more months, maybe till December or January, something like that, we could wait. Next question is, Sai says, thanks. Sure, Sai, anytime. Next question is, I can't read this. I think it looks like Jill, the username. I had applied for my I-140 on March 31st, 2010. It's still pending. Also applied for 485 and EAD. Got my AP since the date is current. Now what do I do? The case is still pending background check. Not much you can do. Not much you can do. You can just, you know, keep tabs on it, and if it goes beyond a certain period of time, maybe 6-8 months, you can keep sending in congressional inquiries or opening a ticket at by USCIS, by calling USCIS a main line. So, you know, that is the only thing you can do. I don't recommend filing a lawsuit. Most of them are really not worth the time and money it takes. What happens is, if you file a lawsuit, the government ends up, it's very sad, but, you know, it's kind of weird that the government will take something like this personally and they end up sending you a 13-page RFE to make your life so difficult that it's not worth filing a lawsuit. So most of these cases, I'm not filing lawsuits. I just tell people to wait. Ramjes2000 says P3 visa. So some artists got their P3 visa approved, but now their petitioner has changed, and what do we do? From what I remember, I mean, I don't have the law in front of me. You can always contact U.S. Do two things. Contact USCIS helpline and see what they suggest, and also send an email to the consulate and ask them what they suggest. I think you'll have to file for a P3 amendment, which is almost like filing a new visa. But I don't recall exactly how it works, so don't hold me to it. I haven't really researched this issue. I think it can be done premium processing, so you may want to just go ahead and check into that. Best place, again, is sending an email to the consulate as well as checking with the USCIS helpline. And if you still have any questions that are spilled over after you've done your due diligence, you can send me an email to help@immigration.com. Next question is from Bonkers31. He wants to know, can we use the courtesy copy of I-140 when filing the I-485? We've done it a time or two in the past. I think you should be able to do it. But again, what you do is double check with the USCIS helpline. These are questions of very fine, granular procedures that I always like to double and triple check anyway. Okay, so contact the US helpline as well. BSAC says, I have not been paid the prevailing wages mentioned in the PWD. Well, that should not be a problem. I'm trying to figure out what you mean by this. You see, when an employer files an H-1 for you, they decide what the salary for the position should be based upon the government data or based upon independent surveys. As long as they are paying you that salary, let's say that salary is $90,000, you're okay, no problem. But let's say the prevailing wage for the green card comes out to be $100,000. Now there's a differential of $10,000. The employer has to show through their tax returns that they have an extra $10,000 each year to pay you. The differential between what you are getting paid and what you would be getting paid under the green card, and this has to go on till the time you actually get your green card. This is called the ability to pay wages issue. Ability to pay wages, okay? And they have to do it for every employee that they have a shortfall for. So if they have 10 employees with $10,000 shortfall, they have to show $100,000 each year in their tax returns till the green cards are actually approved. Next question is Jasu21. I'm in the process of applying for 485 for my father. He was born in 1942. Doesn't have a birth certificate. Will USCIS accept a birth certificate provided by the Indian consulate? No. No. How many and what type of evidence will we need? Affidavits should be from people who were alive at the time he was born. If you can't get that, get affidavits from oldest family members that you have around, and let's see if that works. Okay? You're not going to have any witnesses who were, adults at that time. But you can have, USCIS has given us that much of a leeway that they only want affidavits from people who were alive at that time when he was born. So next question is from B. Sundar. I'm in the process of transferring my H-1 from company A to company B. Is it good time to do H-1B transfers? No. But it depends upon the case, you know. If you are going to be working in-house directly for a company, sure, no problem. But if you are going to, be working at a client site, it becomes more complicated. But remember one thing. Lawyers are getting approvals. Obviously, that's why we are still in business. It's not like we are not getting approvals. But if you have a choice and you didn't have to transfer, I would avoid it. But if it's an easier case, then there is no problem. I'm also hearing that they are issuing a 797B. I guess what you're saying is approval without I-94. That is in those cases where somebody has failed to maintain status, such as not getting paid or working somewhere they're not supposed to be working. Can you also explain the visa transfer procedures? No, sir. That will take me forever. That's something you can figure out from your compatriots and, other people who've done this before. And there's enough information on our website that should be able to guide you. Next question, info for project. I have a clarification. I came to U.S. for doing F1, completed master's, took a job, and then went to H-1B, then went back to F1. Now they've got a job offer. I'm about to accept this position. If this new employer files an H-1B, will this be a change of status? Yes. Could you please help me understand the procedure? No. Like I said, it takes too long. The idea is any H-1B involves a filing with the Department of Labor, then with the USCIS. The total processing time can be anywhere from a few weeks to a few months, depending upon whether you choose premium processing or not. Second, based on your response for change of status, when would I be eligible to start the job? You see, you should be, if your first employer through which you had an H-1B approval was not an exempt employer, you can start working for the new employer as soon as the H-1 is approved. In any case, for any employer, you can start working on October 1st anyway. Okay? So, alternatively, the new employer also suggested the possibility of filing a green card. How would this work? That doesn't make any sense to me. H-1 seems to be the logical step. It's much quicker. Next question is, CS007. I have my MS in CS from U.S. Wow. I have my MS in CS from U.S., okay? They have set MS plus 0, BS plus 5. That's the wrong formula for EB2. MS plus 0, BS plus 5 is the wrong formula, okay? So this case can be denied whether you file EB3 or EB2. The good news is Department of Labor did not catch this problem, that MS plus 0 and BS plus 5 are not the same thing. If they didn't catch it, chances are USCIS will approve the case under EB2 as easily as they will do it under EB3. Okay? So if the perm has been approved, then an I-140 should be filed under EB2, no question about it. If the perm has not been approved, this perm should not be filed at all because this formula is wrong. Okay? Next question, Capri 582, U.S. citizen moving to U.K. I'm engaged to a U.S. citizen. Question is, can my fiancé come to visit me? The answer is yes, on a tourist visa, yes. Because being a U.K. citizen, she can come for, or he can come, I'm not sure. He can come for up to 90 days to visit anyway without, any visa. He can come on visa waiver program. And there is no restriction other than if he keeps coming back every few days, or, you know, if he comes for 3 months and leaves and comes back again, at some point he'll be declined the entry. Okay? So there are restrictions on how long you can stay in any 1 year, and there are restrictions of common sense. I mean, one visit of 60, 70, 80, 90 days is okay, but if he keeps doing that over and over again in the year, they are going to stop him. Okay? So it's okay for him to come for a visit in over Christmas, then go home and get a fiancé visa. Now, that's a totally different ground for entry, so there is no restriction at all. Okay? But if he were to try to return as a tourist every few months, that would be a problem. One visit as a tourist, then going back in March and coming back on fiancé is no problem at all. So they come back on a fiancé visa, they're fine. And there is no restriction on that. The only restriction is that if they come in on a fiancé visa, you have to get married within 90 days. Next question is, Adlaka, change in roles while in GC process. Well, you've got the right answers. The two options that if your role changes, the employer has to file a new labor for the new role, or you have to move back to the old role. So the question number one is, to file the new labor, my employer is saying that I have to provide enough documentation to support that I was capable of doing new role before I joined my current employer. That is correct. That is correct. Unless the two jobs are more than 50% different from each other, then you can use the experience gained with the same employer. Question number two, are there any risks at all with the option two, where I move to a new role and I move back to the old role when my PD is current? I think it's fine. Only problem is, let's say you joined as a software engineer and your green card was processed as a software engineer and they are promoting you to software delivery manager. To argue that I will come back to a lower position when I get my green card, that might be difficult. If it's a lateral move, I don't see any problem with doing it. But if it's a vertical move, then it becomes a little counterintuitive that you will come back to the same position. Okay? So I would want you to, this is not a question that should be discussed so casually. This requires your lawyers to sit down with you and figure out all the pros and cons of what they're planning to do. You know, that's what you need to do. Don't treat this so casually. This is an important point, okay? But I've given you general information. Hopefully that helps. Futurology wants to know, I'm applying for N-400. Again, I can't answer your questions about how to fill a form, but I can give you general information. If I go to college out of state, but I put down my home address, yeah, that's the right thing to do anyway. Because as I understand it, students are actually allowed to put down either the college or the home address. Best thing to do is contact USCIS customer service. Whatever answer they give you, write it down, put down the date and the time of your call, that this is what you were told. So tomorrow, if there's any question, you can say that, you know, USCIS advised me this is what I should be doing. Now, that's not a good defense to most things, okay? But at least it helps you. It helps you take away any presumption that you were trying to, you know, be cute with the government or trying to, you know, misrepresent anything or such as your address. So I always like for you to check and double-check these things with the USCIS customer service and make a note of the date, time, and the content of the call. Do I list my colleges if I haven't started college yet? The answer is very simple. The information only has to be true as of the date you filed the case. And if you want to give more information, feel free to attach a letter that says, oh, by the way, I'm starting college on this date. Okay? Last question for the day is Laksh S., currently H-4 holder visa, H-4 holder, has a prayer group and they want to start a nonprofit organization. Can I volunteer? Yes, you can. As long as, in fact, if you go to my blog and search for the word volunteer on my blog. You can do advanced search on our forums and just search my blog. You will pull up a whole article on this, which talks about how F1, F2, H4 visa holders can volunteer. As long as you're not getting any money or any benefits in kind. You can be a director. You can be any of those things. Okay? Even as on a student visa, I think you can do it. So if you go from H4 to F1, even there, I don't see any problem. It looks like I have completed all the questions that were posted. Anybody who is on this phone and who has posted a question and has a follow-up, press star 5 on your phone. Press star 5 on your phone. If you have a follow-up on what I have talked about, press star 5 on your phone. Okay, I see one hand up. Anybody has a question, press star 5. Okay, let me start this, and then I'll ask for any other question. Just one second. Area code 408, go ahead, please.
Rajiv, I'm Srinivasan.
Haji, namaskar, Srinivasan ji, how are you?
You're doing a great job once again.
It's my pleasure. Aap mujhe ye bataiye, Srinivasan ji, what I was concerned about was, ke aapka jo... were you, in fact, living in USA or were you living in India? What was the scene?
No, living in India. See, the point is, Lamar, our custom, we always live with our son. Now son is here and ultimately we are going to be here only. So earlier, because my mother was there, old mother was there, because she was older and I was the eldest, and the difference between myself and other siblings were about 10 years or so. So the mother had the greater too. So whenever, she was having a lot of love for me. So every year I used to spend time with her about 2-3 months. Then it used to, give her a lot of confidence, a lot of pressure. So that was going on. That's how I had to go.
Hang on one second. Let me ask you this. When did she pass on?
She passed just February 18th, 2011 now.
So just recently?
Recently, yes. That's why the last trip was 149 days.
Okay. I think you have a very good explanation, Srinivasan ji. I think
Yes. You
should be okay.
Just
make sure that you are sincere and truthful in your explanation.
Okay.
Tell the truth. Tell them exactly what happened. Explain to them that, I am the oldest son in the family. And
yes.
Parents always look to the oldest children for their care and support. And, of course, she was very close with me. I didn't want anybody else to take the burden of her care or even emotional support, for the simple reason that my younger siblings are more than 10 years younger than me, and they are, as far as I'm concerned, they are just like my children. And I would not want to pass my responsibility on to them. So now that she has passed on, I have moved here and I'm not moving back. I don't have to ever go back for an extended period of time.
Okay. And then that 181 days that my daughter, that is again, I got the invitation as an elder, I have got the invitation given to people. That will also help for my first trip, is it not?
I think so. One thing you have to remember, the way you count
days
is this. Let's say you are counting the days between July 15th and July 18th. If you left USA on July 15th and returned on July 18th, you take out the day that you left, but you count in the day that you came back in. So July 15th to July 18th will be counted like this. 15th is not counted. 16th, 17th, and 18th are counted. So you are three days outside USA.
Okay.
Something like that. That's the best kind of, maybe you can even leave out 18th from the count. That's what I would argue. But typically that's how government counts time.
So one more thing. How do you there? Do they have any way of looking at whatever days we are giving and everything is there with their computer, or they only by our passport they go through that?
By your passport, by the date you returned your I-94.
Okay.
Okay. But you are required, Srinivasanji, to be meticulously truthful.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So we're not going to play any games with the government. We tell the truth and then we take our chances.
And then this is one more question I've asked, is 30 days or 31 days? 6 months, supposing 6 months means 4 months, 4 into 30, and then balance days or every day, month, June is 30, July is 31, August is 31. We have to compute that way?
That's what I just said in the beginning of the call. I said nobody knows how exactly to do it. Normally we consider 6 months to be equal to 180 days. It really is not. Okay?
Okay.
6 months is more than 180 days, but we consider 6 months and 180 days to be synonymous.
Okay. So how do we go? What way you suggest me to fill up the form?
Basically, you just mentioned the number of days, and always when in doubt, Srinivasan ji, err on the side of too much disclosure in citizenship applications.
Very true. I think I agree. I always say truth is finally truth triumphs.
Absolutely. Satyam eva jayate.
Yeah, Satyam eva jayate. All right. Thank you so much, really. I mean, really pleased to have such people doing such a great service. Keep it up. All the best for you. Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you, sir. My pleasure. Good luck to you.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. Once again, I have one more hand up from area code 917. Anybody else who has a question, any question at all, press star 5. Area code 917, go ahead, please.
Hello, Mr. Rajiv Khanna, how are you doing?
Good, sir. How are you?
I'm all right. Thank you. Actually, I'm working in a hedge fund in New York. By the way, my name is Praveen. And hi. I'm trying to actually transfer my H-1B. I'm on currently sixth year, basically. Mm-hmm. And I have an approved I-140 that was approved way back in January, first or second week or so.
Mm-hmm.
In March, there wasn't much actually activity going on in the marketplace. So our business is directly related to how the market performs. So we can make money, then we'll stay. So there weren't too many opportunities for making money. So I took an unpaid leave of absence. That was totally voluntary, totally genuine.
Let me stop you there for a second. Under the law, if you take an unpaid leave, you're allowed to take an unpaid leave of absence, but where it coincides with some lack of work on the employer's, you know, work site, Department of Labor may not accept that. They might say, or USCIS might say, that this is just a device for the employer to get around the requirement of not benching the employees and pay them. So that could be a little problematic, but keep going.
The thing is, it wasn't the employer who actually asked me to take an unpaid leave of absence. This is something I've been planning to do for a long time, and this time...
If it is genuinely done, you should be okay. If it is genuinely done, you should be okay.
Yeah. The problem is, of course, since it's unpaid leave of absence, then basically I don't have any pay stubs, and it kind of feels very tricky because I feel that I'm on the same footing as somebody else who's trying to game the system, whereas I genuinely am not. So my employer can furnish the written formal request of leave of absence that I had given to him. And if I request them, they might be able to extend a letter saying that this person took a voluntary leave of absence and he was in good standing with me. So is it?
Let your H-1 lawyers decide how they want to handle it. If I were to handle it, typically I would want to know exactly what your personal reasons were, and I would just take an affidavit from you that explains in detail what the reasons were. Typically, you know, you could, for example, if you just got out of school, started working, you've never taken really any time off, I could always use that as the background and context of why you wanted to take time out. And especially, you know, if you are in a very high-stress environment all the time, it's good for you to take a little time off every now and then. This was a good opportunity. So, you know, as long as there's a good detailed explanation, you should be okay.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you very much. I think you're doing a great job.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Have a good
day. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. I am proceeding in the order people had dialed into the conference. Somebody from area code 201 had their hand up and then it went away. Once again, I remind you, I have two hands up right now, one from area code 610, and the other one is from area code 917. Okay, 201 is back again. 201, go ahead, please. You are on the phone.
Yeah. Hi, Rajiv. This is Mitali here.
Haji, Mitali ji. How are you?
Yeah. So, Rajiv, actually, my question is a little similar to the last question, but the only thing is that I do not want to file the WH-8 form. Because it was my personal reason. I was like, I have allergies and I was just on leave because of...
Mitali ji, dekho, agar to aapko allergies, and I know how allergies are, especially, you know, spring allergies can be really very, very bad.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have terrible allergies. When I came to this country for 5 years, no problem. Sixth year, all of a sudden, for 5 months, I couldn't even get out of the house.
Yeah.
So people used to do all my work was done. People used to bring files to me at home. You know, there are. I actually took desensitization, immunotherapy, which is very, very good. Now I don't even take a single pill. Everything is perfect. You may want to think about that. But if you have a good reason, for example, if you have terrible allergies and you had to take time off, and you can get a doctor's note for it. There is no problem at all.
So basically, I took leave from April till now, and April, May, June are the peak seasons. And for
yes.
the last 2 months, not two actually, 1.5 months, which is August and last July, my employer is ready to, you know, pay me something. So I can have one pay stub as such, or maybe two for
don't,
you.
Don't do that. That sounds like too much of an excuse. Unless you are working, I mean, I would be careful. Have your H-1 lawyers discuss this with you in detail. But I'll tell you this thing, that if you were out of work for reasons of your own, chances are you would be forgiven that.
Okay.
As long as you can document the reasonableness of that request.
Okay. There's one more question I have. Is it mm-hmm. advisable for, I mean, if my employer decides to kind of, you know, properly ask ADP to terminate me starting the date when I, you know, start working for another employer? So before the H-1B transfer decision has come out, is it advisable for
Look,
employer?
Look, it's fine as long as your application has been filed, okay? I don't want to give you this kind of advice without being the lawyer on the case. So really, this should be some, this is something you should be discussing with your H-1 lawyers who are filing the H-1 transfer because everybody might have their own way of handling this. I would typically, the way I would handle it, I would make sure that the second case is approved before I have you leave the old employer. And I would make sure that the government has a full explanation for the reason you took leave.
Okay. Okay, I got
okay.
it. Yeah, fine. Thank
Good
you.
Luck, Mithali.
Thank
you. All right, bye-bye. Okay, I have 3 and 2, 5 hands up right now. Let's go to area code 201556. Go ahead, please. Area code 201556. I want to remind everybody who's logged in a little later.
Hello, Mr. Khanna.
Hang on. This call is being recorded. If you want to keep your identity confidential, don't say your name because this call will be publicly available. Go ahead, please, sir.
I understand. I emailed you my complete query, and I was asked to be on the call. Anyway, I'll just be brief. I came here in 2009, and I'm an in-house employee of the company.
Mm-hmm.
I was only paid like 2 months, that is December 2009 and Jan 2010 and Feb 2010. After that, I have not been paid. I have been continually told that, okay, once we get further investments, I will be paid.
Yeah.
We
See,
help.
That's something the employer cannot do. By law, they are required to pay you or to fire you and to withdraw your H-1. If they don't do that, every day that you have worked there, whether or not you actually did any work, you are required to be paid the full amount of your salary.
I understand. Well, it gets a bit complicated later on. The thing is, then after that, they, at the end of the year in December 2010, they did file the income the W-2 by just paying the taxes, not paying.
So basically, they lied to IRS and they said that they had paid your salary, right?
Yes, that's what they did. And now,
no
again,
problem.
I mean,
No problem. You can still file a complaint. This is a very serious matter for them. You file a complaint, you'll get your money.
But the problem I have right now is now I want to. I have had enough. Now we have a serious investment coming in, and now they're telling me, no, they'll only pay me like 25% of the whole amount.
No, they cannot do that. Don't.
Now I want to move ahead.
Listen to me. When you file a complaint against them with the Wage and Hour Division of the Department of Labor,
mm-hmm.
you can then use that a copy of that complaint as grounds for forgiveness of being out of status. Therefore, you get two benefits, and I've said this before in this call. You get two benefits You get two benefits. One, you have a reason because of which USCIS can forgive you and they can give you another H-1 within USA. And two, you get your salary back.
So should I file that after I find a new job, or should I file it before I find a new job?
You should file the report as soon as possible. Okay.
Yeah.
But ideally, I would file it as close as possible to when you have a new job, because ultimately the employer does find out who has filed the complaint. I mean, you can request
still,
the Department of Labor.
I would still like to consult you on like a give you all the furnish you with all the information and do a private sort of consultation if required.
No, wait. I don't charge people who are out of work. Don't worry about that part. I just don't know what else I can tell you. I've just told you exactly what I would have told you if you had consulted me and paid me $600. I'm giving it away free to you. Why do you want to pay for it?
The only question I have right now is I have two options from here. The one option is, I've still been working for them. It's not that I haven't been working for them. They've got free employment for them anyway. But the two options I have is either I keep silent and I just move ahead. They're willing to file again, like they did last year. They're willing to file the taxes this year too.
No, this is don't participate in this. This is fraud.
That is fraud.
Don't be a party to it. You go ahead and find yourself another job. As soon as you find the job, file a complaint. Use that complaint to transfer over to the new employer.
Okay. And what about the last year's W-2? Will it be used against me? What are the odds of me still?
You should look. Whenever you complain to the government, be prepared to tell the whole truth. And you, what choice did you have?
This is like 100% truth. There's nothing else in the whole story.
Yeah, you just tell the truth and look, this is what they did, and I'm not a party to it. I didn't prepare the W-2. What am I supposed to do? So as soon as you talked with me, you talked with the lawyer, you understood what your rights were, and now you're taking action.
And what proof would they require? Would I need?
That's not your problem. That's the employer's
problem.
The employer has to prove that they paid you.
Okay.
I have seen cases where employers actually paid and then made the employees give back the money in cash. Okay? But even in those cases, Department of Labor was ultimately able to find somebody within the employer structure who was, you know, willing to talk about it. And all these guys ended up paying everything.
Okay.
You don't worry about that part. And I'm always there. If you need my help on anything, just go ahead and drop me an email. I'll do the best I can for you. But I've already laid out the next step for you. File a complaint. Find a new job and file a complaint. That's what you need to do.
Should I file a complaint to a lawyer or should I just file it myself?
You do not need a lawyer, sir. This does not require the participation of a lawyer.
Okay.
This is money owed to you. Simple reason. Simple ground for the complaint is I have an H-1 with them. They haven't paid me. That's it.
And I have to file it before December since I can't ask for the wages for the last year, right?
There's a 12-month limit. Technically, you have 12 months, I think, to file for the complaint.
So I won't get the salary for the last year.
But I think if it's an ongoing, if I remember correctly the law, if it's an ongoing violation, they can go back more than a year. They normally don't, but at least 1 year they will get you.
Okay. And this is the last question that I will be asking you.
That's all right. Take your time. I'm not in a hurry.
I'm diligently looking for a new job right now, and I do have a few offers. Once I go to the new job and I file the complaint, will the whole thing come back to haunt me, as in that I was out of status because I was unpaid?
If you were my own brother or my friend, this is exactly what I would have you do. Not only does it protect you, it also gets you your money. That's the best you can do, in my opinion.
So I won't be out of status, and that's...
You are out of status, but this way you will at least have an excuse why you're out of status.
Correct. Okay.
All right.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Kanna.
Yeah. This is one of those things which is a defense as well as an offense. It keeps you in status, or it gives you an excuse to be in status, and it gets you your money.
And I should not, if they're willing, they want me to sign the new agreement because of the new investment and all that? this this month. Mm-hmm. So I shouldn't sign anything and
no, run that by a local lawyer. Contracts are a matter of state law. Run that by a local lawyer, and if they have any immigration questions, let them call me. I'll explain to them. Don't sign anything without a review by a lawyer.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Khanna. Thank you so
You're welcome,
sir.
Good luck. Bye-bye. Okay, guys. I have four more questions. Let me go on to the next one. Area code 917. Go ahead, please. 917.
Is that 917-495?
Yes, sir. That's you.
Hello, Rajiv. I talked to you just a couple of calls ago, and the reason why I actually raised my hand back again is because Mitali's question actually raised a question of mine. May not be the highest priority question, but let me quickly ask you so that you can move on to other calls. And
how many for problems?
Actually, one of the reasons why I took the leave of absence was allergies. As Mitali was saying, that the allergies...
I don't have any problem when people... Look, I'll give you an example. We recently did a case, not recently, about a couple of years ago, we did a case in which the person had been out of status for 14 months.
Mm-hmm.
And she wanted to convert to H-4 because she had not worked for 14 months on H-1.
Mm-hmm.
We were able to get her the H-4 without any problem because we had detailed documentation showing how sick she had been for 14 months.
Mm. I see.
We actually had pictures where she went from 140 pounds to 68 pounds.
Oh,
I actually showed them pictures of her.
My goodness. Okay.
So when somebody says that's an extreme case, what are we supposed to do?
That's true. That's true. Actually, my allergies are very bad. I probably am not as sick as that poor lady was. But, I mean, I have severe case of allergic asthma, allergic rhinitis, and atopic
dermatitis. Me too. I used to get seasonal allergic rhinitis as well as very bad asthma. But I took this immunotherapy. They keep giving
I did.
Yeah, for me, it's been now 5 years. I've not taken a single pill.
Yeah, actually, that's very good. That's what I'm trying to work towards. And I'm actually undergoing immunotherapy since last year.
That's excellent.
Yeah,
in 2 years, you'll see the difference.
Okay. Well, right now, for the H-1B transfer, basically, this allergy season in Northeast, in New York, was one of the worst ones. And I can actually bear testimony to that. So, and I had a reasonable idea about how bad the last allergy season was.
Right.
And I just didn't want to actually put up with it. But and I actually obtained doctor's certificate saying that this person is actually seeing me since April of 2010 on immunotherapy treatment, and I'm also treating him. But obviously he did not advise me to take time off from work, and especially, 2 quarters of time off. So it does not state on his certificate that it was doctor advised. But I do have the certificate that it is... because of these three conditions, and it was
You can try using that, and if the government comes back and says, well, we want more information, then you can take it to the doctor and say, look, this is what the government is asking me. Can you give it to me?
I see. So essentially, you were advising that the doctor should say something explicitly that this person is extremely serious in allergies.
Either that, or they can say that this person is pretty, miserable being outdoors, so it is... our advice for them to stay indoors as much as possible and not, to be able to commute from home, etc. Something like that they can say. Whatever is the truth. I mean, I don't want them to make things up for you.
No, absolutely. There is nothing to be made up. This is a serious condition, and I know how bad it is. A person without allergies.
I know, too.
That's always good. But the doctor's note says that this person comes in once a week or twice a week for treatment, and that's how immunotherapy goes. Is that not the same thing as saying that this person is undergoing a serious condition?
I wouldn't say that. I would want something more from them that says, he suffers from severe seasonal rhinitis and he has asthmatic condition as well. So even if they can describe the condition and not give any recommendations, that might help you.
Okay. Okay, cool. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'll let you move on to the next question. Thanks for your
Good
time.
Luck. Bye-bye. Okay, guys, I have 3 more questions. Okay, hang on 1 second. I messed something up. Another Area code 917346.
Hi, Rajiv.
Yes, sir. Hello.
Hello. Yes. I am currently a green card holder, and I need to make some trips outside the U.S., which will be some will be over 6 months and some under. My question is, should I apply for a re-entry permit or not?
Normally, I like people to apply for re-entry permit anyway.
Okay.
Even if the because see, re-entry permit gives you an additional layer of defense, and it causes no harm. Okay. So, in my view, applying for re-entry permit is always a good idea.
That was a good idea. Okay. Now, if I come back though, would I be using the card itself, or would I be using the re-entry permit then?
You can. You can use the re-entry permit or not use it. That's up to you.
If it's under 6 months.
Yeah, but you can. I mean, even if it is for 2 days, you can still use re-entry permit. No problem. It's not hurting you.
Okay. My next question then is though, I know if you stay outside the U.S. for over a year, the naturalization counter resets back to like 4 years and 1 day or something.
If you have a re-entry permit. Otherwise, it resets to 5 years.
Okay, so now, if I stay outside for less than 1 year and come back using the re-entry permit, does it reset then also or no?
No, sir. It does not.
But the rule of advice would be just stay outside if you can less than 1 year and if it's use the card or the permit to come back in.
You can or cannot use. That's up to you. Ideally, what you should do is keep your stays all less than 6 months.
Okay, cool.
But still get your re-entry permit, okay?
Okay.
And
cool.
And by the way, if you happen to qualify for N-470 or 17, whatever that, I think 470, the application to preserve period for naturalization, if you happen to qualify for that, that's great.
What was the name of the form again?
I think it's N-470. Let me confirm. Give me 1 second. N-470, I'm Googling it. Yes, it is N-470, application to preserve residence.
Okay, cool.
Read that because if you happen to fall under those exceptions, even though you are staying outside USA, it is counted as stay inside USA for naturalization.
And doesn't matter like if you're over 1 year or 6 months or the time?
It doesn't matter.
It
doesn't matter.
Oh, okay. Nice. Very
look at N-470 very carefully.
Okay, thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Good luck. Okay, last question of the day, area code 303. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. Anuj here. My question is regarding the 485 filing. I am all set with all my documentation and dates are all current. My question is, I have a chargeability outside in the rest of the world on EB2.
Good.
But my wife was born in India, so is there any special thing you want me to mention on I-485?
No. See, since you were born outside India, right?
Yep.
So since you were born outside India, you have nothing to worry about. She will follow your quota.
Okay, so I don't have to imply, it's self-implied in the form, right? When I mention her as my spouse, it's self-implied, right?
A spouse is self-employed or you are self-employed?
Oh, no, I'm saying self-implied, like self-implied in the form.
Oh,
that
self-implied. Okay.
Yep.
Well, that's not a problem because she follows your country of birth.
Okay, all right.
Now, interesting thing is, if the situation was reversed, that you were born in India and she were born somewhere else, you could have taken advantage of her country of birth. But you are you're not required to take disadvantage of her country of birth.
Oh, okay, all right. So second question is, at what stage does name check come in, you know?
A name check is as soon as you file the 485.
Okay, but I still get the result of the name check has nothing to do with the issuing of the EAD, right?
At the present time, no.
Okay.
They keep flip-flopping. I've seen them go, we're not issuing EADs until we see name check clearance. But right now they don't wait. They give you the EAD.
Okay. And I think there was a recent change also that they have decreased the SLA for issuing an EAD to 100 and to one, I think it's 90 days that they have to issue an EAD.
That's what they're almost uniformly doing.
Okay. All right. And then again, see if how much time do you think, suppose if there's no name check, you know, nothing is hit on the name check and all.
There's no problem. Your 485 can be approved anywhere between 2 months and 6 months, somewhere there.
Oh, okay. All right. And is I mean, pardon me if I'm offending anyone, but is name check, like, is there a particular criteria on which name check hits?
Yes. If your name contains names like Muhammad, Hussein, you know, these are names that are very common in the Islamic world. It's very likely that you could hit somebody who's on the lookout list with a name like that. So the good thing is, over a period of time, they have actually reduced this to less time and lesser time. A few years ago, if your name had Muhammad, Hussein, Ali, one of these in there, you could be waiting 2 years for your name check.
Right. The reason being, they're a very common name, and they want to make sure that the person is not the same as someone in the hit list.
Okay.
So if somebody has a very uncommon Hindu name, so it should not...
Chances are you're okay.
Tactically, okay.
Yeah, unless you are one of the Tamil tigers, you know, then you got a problem.
All right. I think, okay, cool. That's all the questions I had. Thank you so much, Rajiv.
You're welcome.
One question more. Sorry, Rajiv. I'm sorry. I had a question for you. Like, I posted a question a few weeks back, and you answered that question, but I just want to double check. My I-140 approval says that, you know, at this time, you may not be eligible to file the adjustment of status, so and so. And you said that it's a standard template they use. So there's nothing to worry about that, right? My lawyer told me that they had done pretty much as per my passport, so nothing to worry about.
That's not a problem.
All right. Cool. Thank you so much, Rajiv.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Okay, guys. Now I have, looks like I have two hands up again. Okay, these are the last two questions I'm answering. After that, we'll be done for the day, folks, and we'll meet again in 2 weeks. Area code 201, go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Mitali here again.
Hi, Mitali.
Yeah, the thing is, Rajiv, the allergy lasts only till May. So till May, I had allergies, but rest of the time, I was just relaxing. So does it look good on paper just to state, okay, I had allergies and...
You have to tell the truth, whatever the truth is. No matter how unpalatable, you have to tell the truth.
Okay.
And if the truth works out in your favor, great. If it does not, you take your knocks.
Hmm. Okay, I got that. Fine.
All right. Good luck.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Area code 917364.
Hi, Rajiv. I just have a quick follow-up to the re-entry permit question.
Sure.
My green card was an employment-based green card, but that was like almost 20 months ago when I got it. Would that be a problem for getting re-entry permit? Would they go like, you're employment-based, why are you applying a two-year re-entry permit for?
It's no problem.
That's a problem? You don't have to keep working to apply that?
No, sir. You're not a slave.
All right, cool. That was my final question.
Good
Thank
luck.
You so much.
Bye-bye. All right, folks, it doesn't look like we have any more questions. We will be together again in 2 weeks. Thank you for being here. Bye-bye.